Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. Packed, absolutely jammed on a Friday. This, live in Los Angeles, is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 week, one hour from now, the Blazing Five, which I believe is my strongest Blazing Five of the year. I'm not joking. Been cold, red hot, starts today. 1 hour from today. I had so much fun. Joy Taylor's joining me. I get to watch the game last night with my friend Eric Mangini, former NFL head coach. If you ever get the chance in life to watch an NFL game with a head coach, and we're breaking down plays, and he's showing me film, and he's not, it's just the best. It is just the best.
It's an NFL steak dinner.
NFL steak dinner.
Instead of an NFL meat sandwich.
Yeah, had a little beer, a little steak with horseradish, some broccolini. Way to go. It was so much fun. And saluting veterans today, they'll be in our studio all day. So let me start with this. You know, it didn't look like John Gruden, head coach, and Mike Mayock, general manager, were going to work. You've all seen that couple before. They're bickering at each other, and you're like, oh, that is not going to last very long. You remember in the offseason and the preseason, John Gruden liked Antonio Brown because Gruden likes weapons, and Mayock was holding impromptu press conferences saying he did not like Antonio Brown. It was cats and dogs and coaches and GMs and wide receivers living together, and it didn't feel very good, and HBO's Hard Knocks was there, and it was just a loud, noisy mess. But it's all working. They're working. First of all, the offense is Gruden. It's rugged. Those three running backs, they all look the same. They look like they should be in weightlifting competitions. They're small. They're tough. They run. They pound. They're rugged. That is a John Gruden offense. Derek Carr is efficient, over 70%. They've got a big play wide receiver. They stole a tight end. And Mike Mayock's done an amazing job. Their second pick in the first round, got that from the Bears. Josh Jacobs, rookie of the year. Hunter Renfro, fifth round, has been a steal. Foster Moreau, the tight end, fourth round, looks fantastic. Everybody, the free agents, Richie Incognito. Lord, who knew he had this much left in the tank? Trent Brown worked Bosa last night. It's working, man. This thing is working. And it didn't look like it was working, but between John Gruden's knowledge of the offense and Mike Mayock's personnel eye, and here's the thing, they're both legendarily football-aholics, football-obsessed guys. And yes, the knock on Gruden was, well, he'd be out of the sport for a decade. I said that. And the knock on Mayock was, as a broadcaster, he's too technical. And as a GM, he's never done this before. But both watched the game closely with their obsessive nature of loving football from 30,000 feet. Then they landed on the tarmac, walked into the Raiders facility, and it works. It works. They've had a brutal schedule. First or second toughest in the NFL. They were on the road for 6 weeks. And they're back home, and they're beating good teams. They're beating Detroit, beating Matt Stafford, beating Phillip Rivers, beating the talented roster with the Chargers. It's working. And the other thing is, you know, Vegas is very lucky. Vegas got that hockey team in the first year they got to the Stanley Cup Finals. Vegas is getting a fun, lively, loud, explosive football team. And here's the thing I know about John Gruden. So I work with him at the other place. And I thought John, more than any non-broadcaster that I'd ever work with, understood building brands. He had, you know, Chucky in the look and the book and the snarl. Then he created that thing called Quarterback Camp. And he had a little facility. And he played to the camera. He really knew how, as a football coach, to build a brand as a broadcaster. Well, look what he has done to the Raiders so far. He has taken a brand. He has brought the swagger back. The Raiders have always been a little bit of a rebel, and Gruden's always been the outspoken rebel. He's built a brand. You saw him after the game last night with the fans. He knew what that looked like on TV. John Gruden knew what that looked like to you. He knew what it looked like to Vegas. He knew what it looked like to the NFL. This is a guy that builds brands and builds offenses, and he's just done a terrific job, and I was wrong. I thought it was too noisy. I thought he'd been out too long. I can't wait to watch the Raiders play. They're so much fun. The last 2 weeks, I haven't missed a snap. They're so much fun, and Gruden talked about the win, a come-from-behind win after the game.
That just says a lot about our team. You know, we got a lot of resilient guys. They're going to keep competing. You know, you may beat us, but we're going to be hard out to get. You know, we're going to battle. And that's all I can say about this team. We are very happy with our foundation, our process.
For the record, they're now battling for a playoff spot, a wild card spot, and once again, Gruden's plan, multiple first round picks. It's worked. I didn't think it would. It's worked. It's like nothing I've ever seen. The noisiest NFL team is, by the way, Cleveland's noisy. Raiders noisy. One of them's working. And let me shift to the Cleveland Browns, and perhaps the reason they're not working is their coach, Freddie Kitchens. Some suggest he's learning on the job. For the record, I've taken jobs before where I'm learning on the job. I've said before, when you take a job, you shouldn't be comfortable day one. You should have to bail water for a couple of months. You should challenge yourself. Don't be content. Freddie Kitchens was given the job. And perhaps he's over his head a little. But I would say this. He knows football, and Baker Mayfield liked him. But the stories are now coming out. Quote, there's an increasing belief the Browns will fire Freddie Kitchens before the end of the season. They're not playing in the Super Bowl anyway. So Baker Mayfield will, before the end of the season, be on his fourth head coach. But the bigger issue, Cleveland, do you get it? Could you lack self-awareness anymore? Okay, there's going to be about 8 NFL head coaching openings. Maybe 6. The average is 7. I'll give them to you. Washington, Atlanta, Cleveland. And then we think maybe Jets, maybe Giants, maybe Dallas, maybe Jacksonville. You do know if the Dallas job is open, it's number 1. That's not arguable. Easily number 2 is Atlanta. Matt Ryan, Thomas Dimitroff, good solid owner. Number 3, it's either Jacksonville, who's got Nick Foles and a good roster, or the Giants, who've got the Mara family, good owners, a history, and a young quarterback. The only job that's remotely as unsightly, as poisonous, as toxic as yours is Washington. And it would probably be a coin flip, and my guess is Dan Snyder would pay more. That's my guess. You don't get it, do you? What is the value of running Freddie Kitchens off? You have nothing to play for now. What you want to do now is send a message to the top scouts, the top executives, the top coordinators, the top position coaches, that we're not going to humiliate you. The reason you ended up with Freddie Kitchens is because you humiliated Hugh Jackson. Remember, talented people have options. Leonardo DiCaprio gets the first script. Okay. He turns it down or accepts it. The talented people in any industry have options. They're going to choose the Atlanta job, the Giant job, the Jacksonville job. I doubt it's open, but the Cowboy job. All you're doing now is going to humiliate Freddie Kitchens, like you humiliated Hugh Jackson. And you're going to end up with a second or third tier coach. It should be noted, Greg Williams is not my cup of tea. But you had him in-house, and he was winning at the end of the year, but he wasn't the right fit because he's got an ego, and he would push back on John Dorsey, the GM, and John Dorsey wanted a coach he could control, and as I predicted, he's lost control. But Antonio Cromartie came on this show not long ago and said, you had the right guy. Baker's regressed since the defensive guy, Greg Williams, left.
Honestly, I just think it's the discipline on the team. I think when you look at things and the way that he's playing the first six games of this year, or first five, six games this year, to when he had Greg Williams as the interim head coach. I think Greg was, hey, this is how we're going to play, this is what we're going to do, and this is what you need to do. It's different when you have Freddie Kitchens, and also he's the offensive coordinator. I don't think there's a lot of discipline there. I just think there was more discipline, and Greg and Coach Williams expected more out of his players.
So that's probably too late. But if you can't win the Super Bowl, this is what's happened to Washington. It's about humiliating left tackle Trent Williams, being petty with Jay Gruden, humiliating Hugh Jackson and Freddie Kitchens. What are you doing? This will be in the seventh year of ownership, the sixth head coach or interim head coach for Jimmy Haslam. Talk about a franchise that lacks complete and utter self-awareness. I said this on Twitter last weekend. I'm starting to feel sympathy for Baker Mayfield, believe it or not. I said when Baker came into this league, he's not only got to be good, he's got to be good enough to overcome Cleveland's dysfunction. In the history of my radio TV career, in the Colin Right, Colin Wrong, that is my rightiest right. I should be the mayor of Righty Rightville. We're a year and a half through Baker Mayfield. They're going to be on their fourth coach, potentially. Absurd. Utterly absurd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I like Philip Rivers a lot. I had him on the show. I think he's been a real pro, 14 years in the NFL as a starter. I think he's been in the NFL 16 years. But that two-minute drill last night, it was like a tipping point. It's an epiphany. We've been saying this for years. He's kind of unathletic. The NFL is changing. It's time to pivot. Great weapons. Raiders defense is young and below average. Experienced quarterback. Eight plays, no yards. Too many bad picks last night. Too many errant throws. The NFL's least athletic quarterback. The Chargers are moving to Los Angeles. Philip Rivers, we're told, does not want to live and move his family to Los Angeles. I think it's time to get another quarterback. I know. I've said this about Cam. I've said it about Matt Stafford. I like all of them. I'm not denying the talent. But there are times to break up and move on in relationships, and the world is changing. I don't know if Lamar Jackson will end up being Colin Kaepernick, good for a while but doesn't build. I don't know if that's the future of quarterback. I don't. But I know what doesn't work now. As offensive lines have deteriorated because of the collective bargaining, having an unathletic old quarterback who's had an ACL doesn't work unless you have a superstar offensive line, and they got too many players to be spending a fortune up front. And again, I can like somebody. I like Matt Stafford. Cam Newton drives me nuts, but I would never deny his talent. Philip Rivers is good. But that game last night, that was a mess at the end. And they got weapons. They got two running backs. This is a guy that's been in this league forever. They looked helter-skelter and disorganized against a below-average rebuilding young defense. Even Philip Rivers after admitted that was bad.
You give a team 10 points at their place, and then you have the ball there with a chance to win, and you have eight snaps and go nowhere. It's going to be tough to win.
Raiders missed the PAT. Weather was fine. Bad defense. Three timeouts. Not a yard. Eight snaps. I mean, what are the standards? After a while, Matt Stafford, Cam, and Philip Rivers, I think I've seen enough. Cam's too big, beat up, and it's a precision league. Matt doesn't make enough big plays in big games in a really good division. And I'm watching last night, and some throw. He's lucky those were the only picks he threw. I don't know. Listen, the Chargers can't sell tickets in L.A. They need juice. They need juice. And by the way, they're 4-6. They're going to get a top 12, top 15 draft pick. They've got two good corners, two good backs. They got real players here. They got two good pass rushers. Can you move somebody? But I think you have to seriously consider, and there are tipping points. There are moments as a staff, as a GM, you look up and go, the league's changing. We got the oldest, slowest guy. By the way, this has a little Eli Manning to it, where you got the oldest, slowest, unathletic guy. Offensive line's not great. O-lines are regressing in the NFL. This is just not good enough in a division with Patrick Mahomes, Derek Carr, And in an AFC with all sorts of young, good quarterbacks, the smartest defensive coach maybe ever in Bill Belichick. It just felt like to me, this isn't good enough.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
The media, of which I am marginally a part of, just crushed Bill Polian. How could you miss on Lamar Jackson? Listen, we all miss on these quarterbacks. Who knows? I mean, Dak Prescott, everybody in the league passed on him three rounds. Tom Brady, everybody passed on him for five rounds. Quarterback's hard to get. Russell Wilson, everybody passed on him, including Seattle, for two rounds. How about this sports media, though, gets crushed, myself included, for how we treated John Gruden on Khalil Mack? I got to tell you something. They got two first-round picks. They've already used one, Josh Jacobs. He's going to be Rookie of the Year. And the second one, they have the Bears pick. Well, Chicago's not very good. That's going to end up being a top 10 pick. This morning I looked up who on the mock drafts, who would be available at about the 9th or 10th pick. Oklahoma receiver CeeDee Lamb. Have you seen him play? Oh, my Lord. Gruden's good with wide receivers. This thing's going to work out okay. He's going to end up getting two great players. You can't doubt what Gruden and Mike Mayock have done with their offensive pieces. They've been great with their offensive. Richie Incognito, Josh Jacobs, Hunter Renfrow, the tight end from LSU, they have done a tremendous job. Now quarterback, by the way, Chicago now isn't good, doesn't have a quarterback, and doesn't have a first-round pick to get a quarterback. So we all came in with the anvil, myself included. But never forget this. Remember the sports analytics conference, MIT? Remember when they gave Gruden the award for best analytic trade for getting four picks in the deal, including two first picks? Those people at Sloan are pretty smart because it looks like a good deal today. So Chicago doesn't have a quarterback, doesn't have a first-round pick. Khalil Mack, for the record, has got 5.5 sacks. He's terrific. No dispute. But he's not, like J.J. Watt, not really translating to wins because pass rushers don't if you're always behind. John Gruden and Derek Carr are working. They check a lot of boxes right now, and they didn't check these boxes, all of them, 2 years ago. But offensive line, check. Running back, check, check, check. Wide receiver, check. Tight end, check. And Derek Carr's playing, as John has said, the best football of his life. I didn't love the Khalil Mack move, and part of it was I didn't trust John Gruden as a drafter. He wasn't that great in Tampa. He really wasn't. He was not a great personnel guy in Tampa. But when I watched the first Mike Mayock, John Gruden, the first big draft, I got to be honest with you. Free agent draft, they nailed it. They were good. They know what they're doing. So shame on us. We like to dish it out. We should be able to take it too.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, so last night in the NBA, it's a lot of controversy. I should love controversy, load management, which, by the way, as Joy and I talked about earlier, Kawhi Leonard sits out. Then last night he comes and plays, rested, plays great, dominates the fourth. It wasn't a big deal until they gave it the name load management. Anytime you give something a name, stretching, yoga, now it's a phenomenon. At one point, we had the pet rock. For about 2 years, we were into rocks because we called it the pet rock. Pilates. It's pliability. We all want to be pliable. Pilates. Okay, now it's a culture. So we got a name for it now, and everybody's freaking out. And Charles Barkley does not like this sitting out stuff at all.
There's minor injuries and there's major injuries. Minor
Check.
Injuries take 24 to 48 hours. You know
it that. It ain't the flu, fool.
Chuck, you know that.
No, stop it, Shaq.
Minor injuries Check. Take 24 to Check. 48 hours.
Guy, listen, just say you don't want the kid playing back-to-back. Just leave, let's just be honest with the fans and with ESPN.
I don't know what's wrong with him.
Listen, let's be fair.
So you don't think there's an injury?
I do not.
All right. I would prefer guys don't sit out. Okay, I don't think it's a good optics. I think a lot of NBA fans, it's expensive. I don't like you. I mean, I was a kid. I drove to Sonics. I didn't drive. I was driven to Sonics games. I wanted downtown Freddie Brown, Dennis Johnson, and Jack Sigma and Gus Williams to play. If I'd have shown up and down, I mean, I love downtown. I mean, Stephen A. Smith once said that was his favorite player growing up. Downtown Freddie Brown, it was mine. So if I drove to the game and didn't see him, I'd be bummed out. I like my stars playing. If I drove to a Seahawks game and Russell Wilson didn't play, that made me happy. That's why I'm going to the game. We all, you know, young people now like stars more than teams. Research shows that young sports fans, they don't care about the Thunder. They liked Westbrook. They don't care about the Warriors. They like Steph. You go to games for players in the NBA. You really do. You don't go for the Shield. That's the NFL. You don't go in the summer to a baseball game because your grandfather did. You go to the NBA because you want to see stars. And I don't think the optics are good. Consumer is being rewarded. But let me just say this. Charles Barkley, in his prime, the number of games he played, 67, 75, 76, 65, 68, and 71. And then he got a little old and it went down to 53. I like Chuck. But you know what it was called? Tired, sore, hammy, knee hurt. The minute we called it load management, people freaked out. I mean, that's part of it. Charles Barkley was a guy. He took a lot of games off, but nobody called it anything. It was just called, I partied hard last night in New York. I want Philadelphia game off. Here's the other thing, is that once you become... The NBA is a star-driven league. Once you become arguably the best player in this league, boy, the microscope heats up. People for years were like, you know, the NBA, stars are too political. No, LeBron was into politics. Damian Lillard didn't want to talk politics. Giannis didn't want to talk politics. Chris Paul wasn't talking politics. Blake Griffin wasn't talking politics. Westbrook wasn't talking politics. James Harden wasn't talking politics. Now, LeBron talked politics, and because he was the best player and the microscope's on him, everybody's like, oh, everybody talked politics. No, it's just LeBron. By the way, load management. Okay, so now Kawhi's arguably the best player. So the microscope's on him because he's threatening LeBron just like LeBron threatened MJ. And everybody's like, way, load management. Russell Westbrook took a game off this week. Load management. Nobody cared. Why? Because we don't consider him the best player. So this is a star-driven league, and when you are the best player, for a brief time it was Dr. J, and then it was Kareem, and then it was Magic, and then it was Magic and Bird and Kobe, and we knew about their private lives, and now you add Twitter and social media and load management, and this is just what happens. Guys have been taking time off forever, but they weren't the best player in the game. And once in this star-driven league, you become the best player. I mean, guys have been going to strip clubs forever. Why do I know James Harden does? There's probably a guy that's a backup on Houston that goes more than James Harden. But in a star-driven league, we are obsessed about the guy who threatens the guy. And Kawhi now is threatening LeBron James. I do think Kawhi right now for this second, I don't know how long it will last, is the best player in the game. If I need a bucket, I'd take Kawhi over LeBron. If I need a stop, I'd take Kawhi over LeBron. But I think we have done this, that we look at an individual, and if he leads an industry, and this individual has a habit or a theme or a strong belief, we think the industry does. LeBron talked politics. 99% of these players don't want to talk politics. They don't want the blowback. By the way, Kawhi's doing load management. 90% of these players aren't doing load management. Everybody in this league has missed 7 games. That's kind of in the NBA. A season starts, and Kobe's like, when Kobe gets to a point, Kobe's like, okay, can I take the road game off before the All-Star break so I get an extra day? Can I take the last road game of the year in Phoenix off? This is what players do. They circle it. They give it to a team president. I mean, this is such a star-driven league. I'm told James Harden tells Mike D'Antoni. D'Antoni goes to Harden. Can we practice tomorrow here? Yeah. When's the team plane taking off? They'd clear it with James. That doesn't mean James is a bad guy, but that's the league. How's your star feeling? And this was all negotiated by Kawhi Leonard. It was all negotiated. Okay, the Clippers aren't complaining about this. They sat down in Malibu. Doc Rivers, Jerry West. I'm not sure if Ballmer was there. I think it was the basketball guys with Kawhi. And Kawhi said, I'll come if you get Paul George, keep Lou Williams on the bench, and I can take 20 games off. And they were like, check, check, check. We're all good. Well, good. I mean, do I think it's great optically? Nah, I think it's terrible. But we're all good. Nobody's not going to hurt the NBA long term at all. Trust me, if that sport became available on the open market, networks would be lining up, this one included, to buy it. We would.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Let's bring on Brady Quinn. I love having Brady on. We don't get him very often because he's busy. He's on the road. He's doing stuff. He's doing prep. 8 years in the NFL, Browns, Broncos, Chiefs, Jets, Rams, college football guy for our network, Big Noon Kickoff. That's been a home run show. Congratulations. By the way, Patrick Mahomes is going to start Sunday against the Titans, folks. We'll get to that in a second. Let's start with Alabama LSU. This is interesting. In the NFL, there's kind of a sense. You're hurt, play.
Right.
In college, you're hurt, going to be a number one pick. I don't know. There is a little thing here. Do you think Nick's a little uncomfortable with it? Bama's a little uncomfortable knowing he's not right.
I think they're probably a little uncomfortable with thinking to themselves, can they beat this team, right? And if they can't, or if he wasn't to play, could they still absorb a loss and get in the playoff? I think that would be the concern.
Could they?
I don't know with their schedule. I mean, look, Auburn's a good team. They're going to play them in the Iron Bowl at the end of the year, but I think if they lost to LSU, they could potentially put themselves in a position to be on the outside looking in, especially considering you still have a Georgia team that's in the mix, right? And if they were to lose, different story, but I don't know. I'm not sure if they could, based on the strength of schedule and some of the other teams out there that are in the mix, especially in Ohio State, Penn State. I mean, I think we've seen now they look at the Big Ten as one of the best conferences, if not the best, with six teams being in the top 25, and obviously Ohio State is number one.
Yeah, I mean, it's Oklahoma may not lose again.
But that might not help Oklahoma. I mean, you've got the Pac-12 position ahead of them right now.
Yeah, Oregon beat Washington and Seattle. Mm-hmm. They beat USC. Who do they play? Do they have?
Well, that's the thing with both Oregon and Utah, even though they're ahead of Oklahoma. If you look at the rest of their games, they're not going to play another ranked opponent until they would play each other, assuming that the Pac-12 doesn't mess things up with, I mean, really the state of Arizona. They both got to play, I believe, Arizona, and then one of them's got to play Arizona State. But
if Tua plays, I like Bama because to me, Nick Saban's coached in, I think it's 18 games in the series. He's won 14. He's off a bye, which so is Ed, but off a bye, I think Nick's hard to beat. I like Bama if Tua plays.
Well, look at their schedule before the bye. You know, they've kind of been able to focus on this one maybe a little bit more too than LSU has because of that schedule that they've got to play through. That's part of it. I think the other thing is everyone's had such a hard time matching up with Alabama. They've actually faced the second fewest snaps of man-to-man, any form of man-to-man.
Really?
Yeah, because no one can play them in man-to-man coverage.
Well, the receiving core is absurd.
It's you're going to see probably three first-round picks out of that group. All right, I would imagine Judy's going to be one of the first, if not he's the best wide receiver prospect in this class. Will probably be a top 10 pick. Waddle's going to be somewhere behind. So will Ruggs. Ruggs will actually probably go ahead of Waddle. Smith eventually as well. So this is as loaded of a group as you've ever seen, and it's one of the reasons why you're looking at an Alabama offense that's really led by the pass, not so much their run anymore. I mean, this is a different offense. This is a different challenge for a lot of defenses now.
So as Alabama faces zone defenses, because that's almost the way you have to play them, does that, as a quarterback, does that help the running game? If I know I'm going in facing zones.
I don't know that it necessarily helps the running game. I would say if you run a lot of RPOs, which Alabama does, it does then, right?
Yeah, but Tua can't run a ton of those now with his leg, right?
Well, but here's the misconception with an RPO. An RPO, you know, the broader term, right, run-pass option. So everyone up front's blocking the run, and you've got a run called. But then it doesn't necessarily mean the quarterback has to be a part of that rushing attack if he decides to keep it.
Right.
It just means you have to have other passing routes involved, too, to give you the pass option as part of that. So when you're watching a lot of the tape, if they're playing against a lot of zone coverage, if those backers, those safeties, you know, in the front seven, if those guys get nosy and come up, you're going to have big-time voids, whereas versus man-to-man coverage, a little bit more tricky, right? That route might get impacted because of the press man-to-man, or there's going to be a guy trailing him where you're not going to have as big of a window to throw, and that's the difference between man and zone. But again, if you want to play man-to-man coverage, they can just run a good old-fashioned go route, beat you downfield all day long because they're that talented on the outside.
Who's the best team, though, you've seen this year?
Ohio State.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't even second-guess that. I mean, people were second-guessing what their strength of schedule has been compared to LSU, and it's fair to a certain degree, but I also think Ohio State's been the more complete team all year long. I mean, when looking at all three phases the way they've played, I would say that team, and I saw them in training camp, and I remember walking away from that training camp call and saying, that team looks different. And it's not just the fact that they've got big-time caliber guys like a Chase Young, for example, and I'm sure we're going to talk about him in a minute.
Justin Fields is a remarkable. But they've
got depth. you know, they can rotate in this front seven and the front in particular because they have so much depth and they've done such a good job recruiting, obviously, Coach Meyer for many years. And I'm sure Ryan Day will continue that on.
Chase Young did not borrow money from an agent. It was a family member. He paid it back. Full disclosure, total honesty. It feels like at max a one-game suspension. I think the kid had some financial hardships, didn't go through an agent, paid it all back. This could have probably never been uncovered. He brought it up. What is your takeaway on it?
Yeah, they self-reported it, right?
Right.
And so obviously they realized there could have been something wrong, so they self-reported it. And I think they're trying to handle it in hopes that the NCAA won't take a much harsher approach. However, I mean, look, being a Notre Dame alum and watching what they did a few years ago because of a former student athletic trainer helping out some players and then basically vacating 21 victories, which was extremely harsh considering there was no institutional instability. There wasn't any sort of issue like that. And they had self-reported it, yet they still got punished in that manner.
If Chase Young didn't play in 2 weeks against Penn State, does it change the outlook to you?
Oh, I think it does. I mean, there's no doubt because it's going to change how Penn State looks at playing Ohio State. If Chase Young's on the field, every single time you line up, you're okay, where's he at? Because if it's a pass play, we either have to slide the line, we have to, you know, put a tight end to make it a longer path for him to get there, or maybe he chips him on the way out, or use a running back to chip on the way out. Even if it's the run game, I mean, he's a complete player, and that's why he's such a bulletproof prospect. And to be honest with you, there's probably a lot of people at the NFL level that are like, it's not the worst thing in the world if he doesn't play the rest of the year, right?
Well, Bosa, same thing.
It's not there's probably some people who feel that way, especially people who are picking at the top or project to be picking at the top of next year's draft.
One more college question. I don't think Clemson's overrated. I think they remind me of the Florida Gator team that won a national championship in basketball years ago with four NBA guys, and the following year they were bored out of their mind. Then the tournament happened, and you're like, oh, they shifted gears, and they were losing regular season games. I think Clemson will pop once the games matter.
I don't know that it really matters unless they slip up, right? I mean, that's what this is about. We know how good Clemson can be, but each year is different. Every year is a new year. And I think this group just got off to a much slower start. I don't think their offensive line was playing as well as people had noticed.
And their defensive line had a ton of people to replace.
Sure, but they've actually done a pretty good job replacing them, and their defense has played well this year. That hasn't been the issue with this team. In my opinion, it has been more the offensive line play. It was the lack of a consistent rushing attack. It was obviously some poor throws and decisions by Trevor Lawrence, which, again, he's young.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to see it from time to time.
True sophomore.
I was in that position. It's a tough position to be in, and you're still going to have your inconsistencies, but you know, they'll be just fine, but I think if they lose, now they're in jeopardy. And again, with where the College Football Playoff Committee put them at 5 instead of 4, it goes to show you they're giving teams credit for the non-conference schedule that they've played and what they've done so far.
By the way, the all-time Notre Dame passing yard and passing touchdown leader, Brady Quinney's great on our show. Big noon kickoff on Fox. 2 weeks from now, it's Ohio State-Penn State, which visually is one of the last few. I remember, was it last year, Gus and Joel, or the year before? It was the best football game I think college or pro I watched on TV. Stadium was absurd.
Right. It always is. I mean, that was one of the things. That it was fun taking, you know, Matt and Reggie out there. And Matt had been before, but it was Reggie's first time. Because when we went there for Ohio State, Wisconsin, you know, it was raining outside, and we got there early, and, you know, we'd been to some other places. I'm not going to say where specifically, but people were already out tailgating at 7 a.m. I was like, look, man, it's Ohio, but football's a little different here. It's a little more part of the culture here. So when you get up there, you're going to see there's going to be 100,000 deep sitting in the stands, even with ponchos on, rain or shine, they show up.
Let's talk about Ohio. You were drafted by the Browns. You know, the Freddie Kitchens situation. I'm not a huge fan of humiliating coaches or players. Midseason firings is almost an impeachment for a coach. Could you make an argument it maybe is okay?
Well, I'd say if behind closed doors, there's some things going on that just aren't acceptable in a work environment or within any team. It doesn't appear that way from the outside, but again, I'm not in that locker room, so I don't know what sort of discussions are happening or what's going on at practice or in some of those meetings. So if they did fire him during the season, that's usually why you end up seeing that.
It's just chaos behind the scenes.
It's chaos behind the scenes. They're having a hard time controlling the personalities, and I don't think that's the case with this team. I mean, we haven't heard that much from Odell. That was the biggest concern.
Actually, Odell, despite the watch and visor, verbally, he's just played.
Yeah, he's just gone out and played. And look, he struggled, but so has everyone else. This offense has really struggled. Baker struggled. And it all comes down to the same thing we talk about, the battle in the trenches. I I mean, that's what it comes down to. Their offensive line has not played well. They haven't helped him out. You know, he hasn't been as good either. I'm not going to let him off the hook for that. But, you know, that's the challenge, too, is he's a young player in this league trying to grow, and people have got a lot of tape and a lot of things they saw from him last year, or now they're trying to exploit some of those weaknesses. But I think the only other reason why you would want to make a change is if you're Jimmy Haslam and D. Haslam, and even though they've got a terrible track record of, you know, getting rid of coaches and just kind of turning over very fast, if you feel like you've made a mistake, I think in this league now, one of the things that separates Bill Belichick from everyone else is when he makes a, when he decides he's made a mistake, he moves on. Like he doesn't hang on to a player. He doesn't keep them that much longer. He moves on. He moves in a different direction. And there's something to be said for that. So if Jimmy and D. Haslam feel like he's not the right guy for the job, they made a mistake, you know, I think it would make some sense. The problem is because of their track record, now you look at the next candidate and you say, who wants that job?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like who goes in there think there's any sort of stability? Otherwise, paying them a ton of money and so they've got some financial security, that's really all you could offer them at that point. And maybe a talented roster to work with.
Patrick Mahomes just announced will start against Tennessee. He's not 100%. Go back to your career. How often were you 100%?
Well, I had a foot injury. I had a Liz Frank injury, which is something that kind of Cam Newton's dealing with. Yeah, it's awful. And I finally didn't have surgery on it. I wish I would have, and I've been saying this in talking in regards to Cam Newton, whereas if he's in doubt dealing with a Liz Frank, get the surgery. Like, there's no reason to put it off.
What is the Liz Frank?
The Liz Frank is a ligament across your midfoot.
Okay.
And basically, it helps keeping your toes, or what's called your metatarsals, from separating. So imagine your first toe and your second toe, and that ligament that helps them, you know, hold together being torn.
Pain.
And then starting to, it's painful. It creates instability. You know, for me, I struggle with my motion, right? Because as you transfer and you step to that left foot, you'd kind of fall away a little bit because you didn't want to put too much pressure on it because
sure.
It's going to hurt. Subconsciously, you deal with that kind of stuff. But for Patrick Mahomes, you know, I love the fact that he's going out there and playing. I think they obviously need him if they want to win a Super Bowl. But it's a big decision to make. And look, if he's not going to be at any greater risk, and everything that I've read and seen, it doesn't sound like he's at any greater risk now coming back to play as far as re-injuring it or having the same injury. Then move forward and go do it, right? And that's one of the reasons why I think everyone on that team loves him, the organization loves him, and it's one of the reasons why he's going to get paid a lot of money when it's all said and done.
Yeah. Finally, Mitch Trubisky this week. I'm turning the TVs off in the facility. It's very negative. And I defended him. I said, listen, man, I don't read my mentions on Twitter most of the time because I have opinions. However they land, they land.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into squabbles and screw my self-esteem up and be second-guessing my opinions. I mean, when you were struggling in the NFL and you're a young quarterback and you really need, not yes men, you need support, can you validate him just saying, I don't want to hear this debate show noise all day?
Yeah, you can validate that. But, you know, he's in a different era now. I mean, you really can't escape it with social media and everything else that's going on. I mean, social media was just coming about, and it was kind of so new and foreign that I really didn't know how to use it. I really didn't pay much attention to it. I remember being in college and having the Facebook and thinking to myself, why would anyone want to advertise what they're doing socially, right?
It was called the Facebook,
right? Like when we first got to Notre Dame, it was the Facebook. And I was like, this is just an awful idea. So I'm still to this day, I'm not a part of it. But, you know, the only thing I'd say about turning the TVs off now is if you're turning them off now, you probably should have turned them off last year too.
Yeah.
Right? Because you got to block them out in good and bad. Because you can also listen to your praises too much. And maybe that happened a little bit this offseason with this team. And now they haven't been really able to figure out how to win this year. Or I should say at times, too, how to not lose games. Because there's two different ways of playing that. And I think there's a lot of teams in the NFL who figure out how to win, but then they also don't figure out how to lose games at times, too. And that's why, again, the New England Patriots always are the standard because they know how to win and they know not how to lose, too.
It's great having you. You're a terrific broadcaster, Brady Quinn. Big noon kickoff tomorrow, Fox, 11 a.m. Urban, Reggie, Matt, Brady, and Rob Stone. And just love, you're just a terrific broadcaster. I just love listening to you and watching you.
We didn't even get the chance to talk about the story when I was ineligible for like 4 hours one year.
You were? So, what'd you do?
Well, I'll make the long story short. It's really not that long. I went to visit a professor. He said I could park behind him because there's no spaces, so I could block him in. And I remember going in, we probably met for about 30 minutes. When I came back outside, my car was up on a tow truck. Someone had called to tow the car. And so, you know, I'm a college kid. I was working at the time. I think I had a job one day a week at, it was the Office of News and Information. And I didn't have enough cash on me. Because, you know, once those wheels are off the ground, it's gone.
I know.
Don't get me wrong. Like, my car was a POS. So, he could have taken it, and he wouldn't be able to get much for it anyway. But you know, I was trying to get him to get it down, and the press said, look, I'll go grab some cash. I'll pay for it. You'll be good. That way you can get your car and you can kind of move on to class. Well, it got reported into compliance at Notre Dame, and they self-reported, and then I get a call in class. It was back when we had the Razor phones, right, the little flip phones. And so I keep getting a call from Charlie Weiss. I'm going, man, what is he calling me for? He knows I'm in class right now. So I walk out, flip the phone up. He's like, hey, you're ineligible. You know, what happened this morning? He's asking for an explanation. And I didn't realize I did anything wrong, especially because the professor told me to park there. So I ended up having to go to the Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. I got a check. I had to make the check out for, I think, double whatever the amount was. It was like $80 or something to get it down. So I had to pay like $160. I had to donate it to a 501c3, to a charity. It just so happened to be that the donation went to Hannah and Friends, which was Charlie Weiss's charity. So I ended up being able to practice later on that day and be eligible, but it was the only time in my life where I was
4 hours
shook.
Of ineligibility.
Yeah, sitting in class trying to pay attention, but thinking to myself, like, am I going to be ineligible for the game? How's this going to work?
Lord.
And again, it wasn't anything that I would, you know, consciously did or was trying to get around anything. I didn't have cash on me at the time. And I was parking where a professor told me to park. You know, but that's how the NCAA works, right? That's how all these things
isn't
operate.
Isn't it good to know, though? That he drove a POS in college just like the rest of us?
No, I had to get in through the passengers. It was a two-door Ford Explorer Sport. I had to get in through the passenger side. And for whatever reason, I had to put the car always so I could put it in drive because it wouldn't go in reverse sometimes. So like if I was with, like, you know, if I was with my girlfriend at the time and we got in, I had to back out. It wouldn't back out. I was like, all right, well, I guess we're walking.
They were showing a video of a player, I think 2 weeks ago at Notre Dame, his car didn't go in reverse.
Isn't it great to know that Notre Dame's quarterback, he drove what everybody else drove?
Jason's car in college did not have a back seat.
My car, at times when I drive, because at the time I was dating a girl, she was in Miami, Ohio. So I drive, it was like a four-hour drive to go see her. It would sound like when I was on the highway, like it was a plane taking off. And I'm looking at everything. I'm like, the RPMs aren't going up. I have no idea what the sound is. Is the car going to explode at some point? But it actually made it. I drove
a GMC Pacer. It had so much mold in it that a friend of mine got in it, and he was majoring in something with medicine, and he's like, dude, that's mold. You could die.
It's toxic.
He goes, that's toxic mold in your car. And I'm like, I was just going to grow pot back there or something. My car, my roof in the back was all green. It was like this is college, folks.
Sounds like a better environment for mushrooms, by the way, as opposed to
I'm from Washington State. Yeah. I've heard about that.